Pokemon Dynasty, where he was supposed to kiss you very passionately, but he didn't. Was he trying to protect you?
Yes, and we didn't know at the time. Months later, when it came out in the press that he had AIDS, I realized he tried to protect me.
Hi there. This week on Two Boomer Babes.
Home Sweet Home, helping a parent transition to a retirement community.
Hidden cameras, microphones, and GPS tracking devices. Spy gear to catch the cheating spouse.
From the Big Valley to Dynasty, an iconic actress shares recipes for exciting living.
Plus, the importance of making a digital estate plan.
Especially since our online accounts may outlive us. Amy Goyer is not only a national caregiving expert, she's living the moment. While she is now caring for her parents in the home her parents owned for 31 years, a few years ago, however, her story was different. Amy orchestrated her elderly parents' big move from their home of many years to a retirement community.
As millions have experienced firsthand, the transition is difficult emotionally and financially. Resentments and even rifts can happen in the closest of families. Amy joins us on the phone from Arizona to share her experiences, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Great to have you on the show, Amy.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you.
So often when an elderly parent has to leave their home of many years, it's because of some catastrophic event. You know, they've fallen down, they've broken their hip, They've had a stroke. They just can't take care of themselves anymore. They need to move like yesterday, and there's no time for planning. Was that the case with your parents? Is that what happened?
Well, you know, with us, there were definitely gradual changes and increasing needs for support over time. You know, my dad's difficulty in keeping up with the house, you know, all the needs of the house, and my mom's care. My mom had a stroke now 26 years ago, so he'd been kind of caregiving for her. For us, there were two kind of events. One, my mom ended up in the hospital with a bad flu. She was dehydrated, you know, and she just was very sick, and my dad wasn't really able to manage her illness the way he had in the past. And number two, my dad has vision loss. He has glaucoma, and he also has Alzheimer's disease, and his cognitive abilities had begun to decline to the point where it all sort of culminated, you know, and we didn't want him to drive anymore. And that was really the turning point.
Oh, that's really tough. Amy, did your parents realize on their own that they needed to move, or did they need some coaxing from you and your siblings?
You know, it was interesting when my dad's doctor joined us in a discussion with him about driving. He had sort of a typical reaction. He was kind of angry. He, you know, and once their independence taken away from them, and he, you know, we urged him, and he agreed. It's not that he fought us on it, but he was unhappy about it. But the next thing out of his mouth was, well, then we are going to move.
Amy, so, I have to tell you, you are so lucky, because that's what happened with my dad, but he didn't want to move.
I
mean, he was mad.
We are lucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
We were lucky. Now, let me tell you, my mom was not quite so excited about it, though.
Right. Well, nobody likes to be told that they have to move, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's hard to, it's, you know, you want to be sensitive and respectful of their feelings, but the reality is that they really have to move. So how did you manage that? How did you get your mom to go along with it all?
Right. My dad wanted to move. My mom really didn't want to move. She loved her home. But she also knew, and we kind of talked with her in a very realistic way, that it was getting harder for Daddy, that he was the one who was really taking care of the home. We focused a lot on that, his ability to take care of the house. He was just tired, and it was stressing him out. And so all that, in addition to the fact that he wouldn't be able to drive them places anymore, and she sort of reluctantly agreed, but she was very depressed about it for a while.
Well, Amy, help us with this. If a parent needs to move quickly, how do you go about finding the right place with very little time? You know, you've got to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And we certainly don't want to make a mistake. First of all, it's very emotional, and it's very expensive.
Exactly. What we did was, and it's very important, I think, to involve your parents or whoever you're taking care of in decisions as much as possible. You have to kind of assess how much they can handle. And so what we did was we sat down and we made a list of our their needs and their desires and what were the must-haves, you know. And then we got some help from an assisted living locator service.
Oh.
And let me ask you about that assisted living locator service. What are they, and how do you find a good one?
Right. We found, I looked online, I did the usual Google search, and I also contacted the Area Agency on Aging, and it's a real good idea to get in touch with them. They often have a list of local housing options as well as these kinds of services. So I found the Assisted Living Locator Service in our area. And a wonderful woman named Kim, who was familiar with all the senior living options in the area. So she saved us a lot of time because we had made our list of, you know, the must-haves, you know, the location, they needed to have good meals, they had to have their dog with them and a good place to walk the dog, all of those kinds of quality of life issues, and then the basic needs things and the financial, you know, range. And she really knew how to weed out some of the ones that I might have wasted a lot of time visiting.
So did you visit the ones that you thought were pretty good and then narrow down the list again so you don't want to overwhelm mm-hmm. your parents with the choice, or how
right.
did that work?
Right. I suggest visiting all of the places that you can and then narrow it down to two or three at the most that your parents can go visit. That's what we did. I visited about 10 places. And my sister came with me for as many of those as she could so we could kind of have both of our opinions. And then we narrowed it down to three. And my parents visited three of those places. And that was much more manageable for them. And then we compared each of those places to our list. And that helped us narrow it down even more.
This is the Two Boomer Babes, and we are speaking with AARP's family expert, Amy Goyer, about her own experience helping her parents transition to a retirement community. Amy, it's obviously very important to get a handle on your parents' financial situation, which may not be so easy if they've kind of held their cards very close to their chest. How do you go about doing that?
Well, you know, finances can be really a tricky and sticky point because it's a very personal thing. You know, you don't want your parents to feel like they've failed in any way if finances aren't organized in the way or managed the way that you think they should be. So it's a good idea, first of all, if you can start helping with that over time before something like this move or a crisis happens. I had been assisting my dad for a long distance and then eventually over time took over managing those finances. And for him, it was a very stressful thing, so he was happy for me to do that. However, I had a hard time getting a handle on everything because his, you know, his cognitive decline had started to happen and he couldn't always say, oh yeah, well here's the file on that and here's the thing. You know, so I had to do some detective work, and it was very important that I have power of attorney so that I could call the credit cards or call the bank or work on those things. And we put my name on his checking account, and that was also a really key step.
Right. And we know that these facilities are so unbelievably expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you look into any of these veterans? I don't know if your dad's a veteran, but there's some benefits out there, right, if you're a veteran or you have other, you know, mm-hmm. you're in other classifications.
Right. There are some veterans, actual facilities, some assisted living and some skilled nursing facilities. There was not, the one that was here in the area was not well located for us and didn't quite offer what they needed. For my parents at the time, we thought they'd be going into assisted living. But once we started evaluating, we found that they didn't really need all of the services that were in assisted living, and it's more expensive. So they actually went into an independent living apartment in a senior, in a community. So that was a continuing care retirement community where there was independent living, assisted living, and skilled nursing on site. That saved a lot of money because independent living was much less expensive than the assisted living. And then we were able to supplement with some what they called personalized living services. Someone came to help my mom with a shower. We paid a little extra for that. But in the long run, that saved money for several years.
And Amy, tell us how you made that final choice.
First, we, as I said, made a great list. And it was really important that my parents be part of that list and that I be, and my sister, who at the time also lived here in Phoenix, because we were going to be caregiving and supporting. So one of the important things was the location be close to where we were living. I was moving into my parents' home, and so we wanted to have, you know, we had sort of a 20-mile radius that we didn't want to go any further than that because I wanted to be able to stop by more frequently. That was a big, it narrowed it down quite a bit. Then we looked at their top priorities. Believe it or not, the dog was one of the most important things on their list. There's no way they were going to move anywhere without their dog. And that my dad had a place to walk the dog because that's a big part of his exercise and keeping him healthy both mentally and physically. So we looked at those things, and one of the most important things was the size of the apartment. My mom, again, didn't want to move. She didn't want to give up her beautiful big home. And so she really ended up opting for the facility that had the largest apartment. Luckily, it met all the other criteria as well. So we let her make the final decision, but we kind of knew it was going to end up being, you know, the one that we would choose as well.
Well, Amy, from your viewpoint, I know this must be a very overwhelming time emotionally for a child, even an adult child, to go through this. How do you stay positive? How do you keep forging ahead?
The move at that time was such a big turning point for us. It just felt emotionally and in practicality like such a huge change. You know, my dad's cognitive abilities, it just really marked the change there, not being able to drive. And, you know, that's such a symbolic thing. You know, my dad was the head of the household and all the family trips we took. And when daddy was driving, we all felt safe. He's not going to be in charge. He's not going to be at the helm anymore. You know, the change for me personally, I moved from Washington, D.C. to Arizona so I could be there to support them, going back and forth, changing in my work. I left my boyfriend and my support system and my friends behind, a lot of financial challenges for me. You know, so you have your own personal challenges as a caregiver, as well as the loss and the grieving of the changes that are happening in your parents.
Right. And it's role reversal because it's almost like you're becoming the parent and they're becoming the child, which to me was devastating.
Yeah, I really try to focus not on, because they will always be my parents and I will always be their child. And I try to always look at it that way because I think it helps. It helps me see my role as supporting them, not taking over their lives, not being their parent. And yes, I'm going to be providing more and more support, but I always will respect them as my parent. You know, and I think they feel that, and that helps me cope as well. You also have to try to take time for yourself as a caregiver. You know, the little things that you do, but having some time to yourself that is separate from them. You know, having time to, you know, read a good book or do those things is really challenging when you're caregiving.
You've given us some great advice. AARP family expert Amy Goyer, thanks so much for sharing your story with the Two Boomer Babes.
Up next, high-tech spy gear for catching a cheating spouse. We'll be right back after the break. Support comes from Accent on Travel Rehoboth Beach with a Viking Rhine River cruise with us, the Two Boomer Babes. For questions and reservations, 302-703-6154.
Bailey Chase offers a lifestyle of flexibility and choice that provides you new opportunities to experience your independence and enrich your life. For more information about the lifestyle Bailey Chase offers, visit www.integrace.org. Equal housing opportunity.
Not too long ago, if you thought your partner was cheating, you would rifle through pants pockets or purses, check out credit card bills for unfamiliar purchases.
Or hotel charges.
Yeah, or hire a private detective. But in today's high-tech world, the use of James Bond-like spy gear is becoming the norm to catch a cheating spouse.
Todd Morris is the CEO of Brickhouse Security, which supplies surveillance equipment. He joins us on the phone from New York City. Pleasure to have you on the show, Todd.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us, how is business doing these days?
Business is booming, and we are definitely seeing a big rise in the number of people who are sort of DIY private investigators looking into spousal issues, which is not the most cheerful part of our business, but is certainly growing.
Well, give us the lowdown. You know, who are your main clients?
Our main clients are parents worried about teenagers, teenage drivers, things like that, small business owners, and also law enforcement agencies. So we sell investigative tools to a broad array of people, usually for longer-term surveillance because the products tended to be expensive in the past. But as they have become less expensive and easier to use, people have felt more comfortable with a sort of one-time use solution, getting the answer to a question that they just need to know the answer to. For example, is my spouse faithful?
So we have to ask you about some of the spy gear that you sell. First, hidden cameras, which can be placed just about anywhere. You got to tell us about the hidden, the camera and the hidden tie.
We've got hidden cameras that some people call them nanny cameras because most of them were originally designed to keep an eye on your nanny, but now they are definitely being used to also keep an eye on who comes into your house with your spouse and what's going on when you're not there. So going away on a business trip, sometimes people will leave a nanny camera or a hidden camera behind to find out if someone else is spending time in their house with their spouse.
And you get really creative because can't you hide these cameras and baseball caps and sunglasses and even coat hooks?
You can put them into just about anything. It could be a coat hook on the back of your door. It could be a tissue box on the kitchen table. Really just about anything. We've got air purifiers that even oscillate back and forth and keep your room fresh and cool while they are taking a picture panning around throughout the room.
Through the bed, I would imagine.
What about GPS tracking devices? And how do they work? Is there an app for that? Or tell us about them.
A GPS tracking device is a small device that you can put on or under a vehicle and then track it for an extended period of time. So batteries typically last significantly longer than a cell phone battery. For example, the Spark Nano, which is the most popular GPS tracker for this type of purpose, the battery will last over 10 days, and you can look at your phone and see a dot on the map and know exactly where your spouse is and where they have been in the past because it records all of that data.
Wow. And not only your spouse, as you said, our children, I guess, we can really track where they've been.
You can set alerts and it can send you a text message or an email if someone drives over 30 miles per hour. You can, or whatever speed you deem appropriate, or you can set alerts when someone enters or exits a specific zone. So you could draw a circle around the school and one around the house, and every time your child leaves school and comes home, you'll get an alert when they do each thing.
Okay, well, what about if they're not driving? Are there devices we can stick in like a purse or a backpack to really check them out?
Absolutely. The Spark Nano is about the size of two dominoes on top of each other. So it can easily fit into a purse, into
a briefcase.
Stuffed animal. We actually have a lot of parents who put it inside of a teddy bear for custodial interference issues to make sure that someone who has partial custody doesn't take the child to an airport or across a state line.
And aren't some of these GPS tracking devices, aren't they also available on an app?
The device can be monitored from an app. Tracking a phone with an app isn't really a surveillance product. It's more of a social networking product. So you can check in from Facebook or Foursquare to let people know where you are. But if you're trying to locate someone's cell phone, with the exception of some police and business-grade products, you can't do it without alerting the person to what's happening.
Okay, and what about spy gear on a computer or cell phone to check out salacious emails and texts? What kinds of gadgets are available for that?
So one of the most common fallacies is when you delete a text message, it's gone forever. And so a lot of people who are cheating on their spouses or significant others will send text messages to the other person and then delete them. With products like the iPhone Spy Stick or the Android Spy Stick, you can actually recover deleted text messages as well as pictures and other media that have been on the phone and then deleted off of the phone.
That's great to know about that.
So does it go back years or how far does this go back? Just anything that's been written?
Just like any data recovery on a computer, it goes back as far as it hasn't been overwritten. So when you delete a file, you're not actually wiping it off the hard drive or the memory card inside of a phone. What you're really doing is telling the phone that memory space is now available to be saved new data onto that space.
Wow.
So if someone is a heavy texter, they may fill up that space with new text messages. If they're not a heavy texter, it may stay there for months.
And how do we access that?
Well, at brickhousesecurity.com, we have all the information about the iPhone spy stick, the Spark Nano, and as well as the hidden cameras. So it's easy to find the information about how they work. We've got a whole help section with informational articles.
This is Barb and Kathy, the Two Boomer Babes, and we are talking with Todd Morse about the growing popularity of using high-tech spy gear to catch a cheating spouse. We'll continue our conversation after the break and find out how much all this costs.
Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day I wake up
for those caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We're back with Todd Morris, CEO of Brickhouse Security. He sells high-tech spy gear, sometimes used to catch a cheating spouse. Todd, how much do these devices cost?
The price of these devices has fallen dramatically over the last few years to the point that it's a fraction of what it was just 2 or 3 years ago. A GPS tracker is now under $200, where it used to be over $600, and a hidden camera, you can now get a really great hidden camera like the Black Box for under $100. Body-worn cameras generally run from about $100 to $150.
Todd, if we are suspicious that our spouse is actually spying on us, just like in the movies, I'm wondering, can you sweep the house for bugs, like, you know, just like they do in Ghostbusters or whatever that movie is? Do you offer that service?
Brickhouse Security does sell a lot of counter-surveillance products. Counter-surveillance can sometimes be more expensive because it's a smaller volume, but we do have counter-surveillance products that can sweep for cameras, even illegal audio listening devices that are sometimes snuck into the countries illegally by foreign travelers, and GPS trackers. Find out if someone is spying on you.
Now, are snooping gadgets legal?
Hidden cameras are legal. As long as they are not put somewhere where someone has a reasonable expectation of privacy. So in your own home, your spouse has a key to the door. At any moment, they could walk in the door. You have no reasonable expectation of privacy. Spousal shared property, like a car, can be tracked with GPS legally. If your spouse owns their own car, or if they drive a company car, it may not be legal to put a GPS tracker on it. And you should certainly check with a local lawyer to ask them about the laws in your state. The other thing you need to worry about is many spouses will call us and ask for audio bugs to record phone calls. And that is a big no-no in every state. So in every state, you're not allowed to record phone calls or do covert audio recording in the house.
And why is that? Because you need the permission of the other person?
You need the permission of all people in some cases. So in some states, you need the permission of one person, and in other states, you need the permission of all of the parties involved. So bugging a telephone is illegal, and if you bring it to divorce court, you are more likely to end up with a big fine yourself.
Well, bugging a telephone seems so passe, doesn't it, with all this other high-tech stuff going on?
Some people say even talking on the telephone is passé with text messages and email and all the other ways people communicate. We do find that while a lot of people call us up not exactly sure what's available and they want an audio bug, we're able to easily explain to them why an audio bug will land them in hot water faster than they want to. And there are other ways to get the answers they need, because in the end, the big issue here is there are people who can't sleep at night because they just don't know if they should go forward with a divorce or not, and they have trouble confronting their spouse without proof to know.
What about placing a recorder that's voice-activated in our bedroom?
That is certainly something people have done. It is not something that we would promote because it is illegal to do. If you leave an audio recorder in your bedroom and your spouse and their partner come in and start talking, you are, in fact, intercepting covertly their audio communications, and that is a federal wiretap law.
Todd, I would imagine that if you have to snoop on your spouse, that's a big sign that your marriage is in deep doo-doo, I would assume. I mean, do you refer these people to divorce lawyers? I would imagine that would be a great offshoot for your business.
Actually, only about 50% of the time that a suspicious spouse finds out that their suspicions are, in fact, what they thought. So what we find is many people are suspicious because their spouse may have a gambling problem or a drug problem or may just be doing something that they don't think that their spouse would approve of, like having contact with people they shouldn't have contact with, but not in a way that would be considered infidelity. We had one person who was, you know, the wife was actually going out and meeting with their estranged son who the father had disowned. And he thought that she was cheating on him. In fact, she was just going to visit her son.
Todd Morris, CEO of Brickhouse Security, thanks so much for joining the Two Boomer Babes.
Thanks for having me.
Support comes from Accent on Travel, Rehoboth Beach, with a Viking Rhine River cruise with us, the Two Boomer Babes. For questions and reservations, 302-703-6154.
Bailey Chase offers a lifestyle of flexibility and choice that provides you new opportunities to experience your independence and enrich your life. For more information about the lifestyle Bailey Chase offers, visit www.integrace.org. Equal housing opportunity.
Up next, her beauty was unforgettable on Dynasty and Big Valley. Actress Linda Evans shares her recipes for life. We'll be right back after the break.
For five decades, television fans followed actress Linda Evans. She portrayed the beautiful Audra Barkley in The Big Valley and the glamorous Crystal Carrington on Dynasty. But her talents extend way beyond the silver screen. She even won first place on the reality show Hell's Kitchen.
Today, this boomer babe is constantly reinventing herself and joins us from her home in the Pacific Northwest to share her recipes for life, also the title of her new book. Welcome, Linda, to Two Boomer Babes.
Well, thank you. What a great name, Two Boomer Babes.
Oh, thank you. We like it. You have a very close family, which Kathy and I both can totally relate to. And your mom and dad were even professional ballroom dancers. And how cool is that? But life wasn't so easy growing up. And your mom contracted polio when you were just a little girl. That must have been really difficult on your family.
That was very, very difficult because it sort of split us all up. And, of course, at the time, it just was such a scary thing. You didn't know what that would mean, and that she, you know, completely came back from it and could walk and could move around and get her strength back was just miraculous. And so we were very grateful. But, no, it definitely was hard.
And then, ironically, your first big break came when you actually tried out for a part that didn't go so well. So
yeah.
Tell us about that. Life just wasn't a bowl of cherries for you.
Well, I was up reading for a movie, and I did the reading, and the director said, "That is the worst reading I've ever heard in my life." And I thought, oh, my God.
That's not good to hear.
I think I'll just hide and slink out of the room so nobody sees me. And then he stopped me as I was going out the door, and he said, "But you have a quality, so come on back. And we've got another project we're doing, and I think you have the right quality for it, so I'll work with you on it." And it was Big Valley, and I tested with two other women, and three men and three women were tested, and I tested with Lee Majors, and we got the part.
Come on, Linda, wasn't that quality that you were absolutely gorgeous?
Oh, my God.
That was probably a big part of it.
I thought I was. It was not something I felt myself, necessarily.
Well, and then Barbara Stanwyck really became important in your life. And wasn't she really kind of like another mother to you?
Absolutely. I was so fortunate to be working with a living legend, my God. And she took me under her wing, and she mentored me. She showed me how to be in the business. You know, it was never anything I wanted to do. I wanted to get married and have kids, and I was discovered when I was 15. And so this career was not something I had planned on, nor did I feel confident in. And she was just great to help me understand it. And my mom actually passed away during Big Valley, and she said, look, I'll never be your mom, or replace her, but I'll be there for you as long as I live. And she really was there for me her whole life.
And then we understand that the reruns are still running for the Big Valley. How do you feel about that one? You're living in perpetuity here.
I can't believe the film hasn't disintegrated. It was 1965. I mean, it was like the film is so old. I don't know how they keep showing things so old. But I guess Westerns are timeless to people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, Linda, you've had some really amazing loves in your life and a couple of marriages that didn't work out so well. But your first husband was John Derrick, who you say was the love of your life. And you were in love with way before you even met the guy. So how did you meet him?
Well, I met him first on the screen when I saw him when I was a teenager and said to my sister that I was going to marry him. But he called me. He had seen the pilot of The Big Valley before we had done the series and wanted to photograph me. And because he had, you know, been this guy I was in love with and had a picture over my bed for so many years, I thought how fun to meet him. I heard he had been married to Ursula Andres, and so when I met him, she was away doing a film with Jean-Paul Belmondo in France. And I thought, oh, my God, he's so handsome and so lovely. And he called her his bride. I thought, he's romantic. They've been married 9 years. And I thought, this is great. And went back to my life, and he called me about 3 months later. Ursula had run off with her leading man, and he wanted to take some more photos. And that was the beginning.
Oh, and he really was quite a romantic, right?
Oh, my God, my God. 9 years. He wrote me a note every night of my life telling me how much he loved me. He made me clothes, boots. He loved working with leather, and he made me boots and things. I mean, when he loved you, nothing else existed but you. It's a very rare quality in a man.
This is Barbara Cathy, the Two Boomer Babes, and we are speaking with actress and uber boomer babe, Linda Evans. Linda has recently released her memoir titled Recipes for Life. Linda, we have to ask you about Dynasty, which we think was, you know, I was a huge fan growing up. And working with John Forsythe, what a charmer. Was he as nice and genuine as he seemed to be? Was he Blake?
He was Blake and more than Blake. He was, yes. Yes, he was. But the thing with John is when I was discovered when I was 15 and my girlfriend's agent, she gave me her agent and he sent me out for my first speaking part. It was a show called Bachelor Father, and John Forsythe gave me my first speaking part when I was 15. And I worked with him then. I had not seen him until we walked on the set of Dynasty, and he said, my, little Linda Evanston, how you've grown, and how is your mother, Arlene? I thought, oh, my God, John, you remember. After all those years, he remembered. And he was the most, he was a gentleman. He was bright, charming, caring, loving. I mean, he was everything you thought he was and more.
He sounds totally
genuine.
And his
wife, Julie, was an exceptional woman, and we became dear friends, and we just traveled all over the world together. It was beautiful.
Well, and you also hung out with John Wayne and his wife, Pilar?
Pilar Wayne, yeah.
Pilar, oh, and you enjoyed dinners at their home and trips on their yacht. I mean, what was he like, the big guy?
Well, actually, he was also as wonderful as we thought he was. He was the man that you saw on the screen was who he was, only he did things that people don't realize. Like, he used to like to play chess with John, my ex-husband John. And you would never think of John Wayne as a chess player, would you necessarily? And another thing that he did that was very endearing is he would, at Christmas time, get a list of all the grandchildren the children, grandchildren, and he would go out personally and buy gifts for them. Isn't that sweet?
Wow. That is very sweet.
Can you imagine a John Wayne and a Toys R Us?
No. Can't quite picture that one.
Right.
Can't picture
that
one. Okay, and then we have to ask you about Rock. Now, he shot a scene with you on Dynasty where he was supposed to kiss you very passionately, but he didn't, even with all the retakes. Did he, obviously, was he trying to protect you? Did he know he had AIDS at that time?
Yes, and we didn't know he had AIDS at the time. And it was very strange that he wouldn't do the scene as it was written, or that the director and producers kept trying to get him to do. And it wasn't until many, many months later, when it came out in the press that he had AIDS, that I realized how strongly he tried to protect me. And it was so difficult for him at the end, because here he was dying of something, and the press was saying that he was irresponsible, and he wasn't at all.
It was very tragic, really tragic. Linda, we really love your book, and we want to talk a bit about it. And you offer some just wonderful, what you say, recipes for life. And they're culinary recipes, as well as just kind of your own take on things. And if you had one recipe that you would want to share with our listeners for life, not culinary, I'll ask you about that next, what would that be?
Oh, so not food, one recipe.
Yes.
Ah, okay. Okay, I would say that in looking back at my life, it was wonderful to see how when things happened that I thought were the worst thing that could happen to me in life, that actually they were the best thing that could happen to me in life. Every moment is an opportunity to make your life better. You know, I just look to everything. My dad passing when I was 15 was a tragedy to me, and yet I never would have accepted the job that came to me, that I was discovered and asked to do, that started my career, if my mom hadn't needed the money, so I wouldn't have had my career. When my husband left me, John Derrick, for 15-year-old Bo Derrick, I thought it was a tragedy, but he had wanted me to stop working, and I never would have done Dynasty. It's like sometimes life moves you around through things that you think are painful to actually give you something you never even knew you could have.
So when one door closes, another one opens. It's really true, huh?
That's really it.
My life.
And then you offer some really terrific food recipes. I can't wait to make several of them, by the way. Give us your favorite. What would it be?
Can't have a favorite food recipe. It's like favorite. They're all so,
that's true.
So good, depending on what you're in the mood for.
Oh, that's true.
I think people love chocolate, and I have a chocolate souffle pudding in there that just makes people faint. I mean, it's just so good. People think you're the greatest cook in the world because you've made it, and it's not difficult at all.
Well, and I thought your mom's hot dog stew sounded pretty interesting.
You know, it's how someone cannot have a lot of money and make something that feeds a lot of people that's really, really tasty. You know, people, you know, go, oh, my God, hot dogs, too. That's kind of strange. But if you taste it, it's fabulous. I still have it today, to this day. And I can afford to have other things, but I love it.
And all you have to do is light a candle and you add some romance.
Exactly.
Well, Linda Evans, actress, thanks so much for joining us and sharing some wonderful memories and great recipes for life.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Barb. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Up next, Shoot the Breeze with the Babes. Did you know that your online accounts have an afterlife? We'll be right back after the break.
Bailey Chase offers a lifestyle of flexibility and choice that provides you new opportunities to experience your independence and enrich your life. For more information about the lifestyle Bailey Chase offers, visit www.integrace.org. Equal housing opportunity.
Support comes from Accent on Travel, Rehoboth Beach, with a Viking Rhine River cruise with us, the Two Boomer Babes. For questions and reservations, 302-703-6154.
Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. At 7 a.m., I shower. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. At 7 a.m., I shower. I start laundry at 8. At 10, we go for a walk. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This is the news. This morning, we are saluting the 2.2 million women who have joined in the war effort. They now make up 37% of the workforce, changing their role forever.
The prestigious Harvard Medical School is breaking ground today, opening its doors to new female applicants.
Today, little girls all over the world look to the sky, where the first woman is now in space.
Military stereotypes are challenged today with the trailblazing promotion of a U.S. female officer to four-star general. It was just announced that the vast majority of last year's doctorate degrees were earned by women.
We've come so far, but our news is changing for the worse. More women die from heart disease and stroke than men, even though it can be prevented. Make a change at GoRedForWomen.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the American Heart Association's Go Red for Women.
Who might you save?
Your mother, your father, your husband, uncle, and son.
Learn FAST, F-A-S-T, the sudden signs of a stroke, and you could save
your friend, your best friend, teacher, boss, coach.
F, face drooping, A, arm weakness, S, speech difficulty, T, time to call 911. F-A-S-T, face, arm, speech, time. That's F, face drooping, A, arm weakness, S, speech difficulty, T, time to call 911. The sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in the recovery of
your neighbor, the waiter, a fellow shopper, a total stranger, grandmother, grandfather.
So learn FAST, the sudden signs of a stroke, then pass it on, because you never know who might save you.
Your wife, your colleague, teammate, mother.
Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
So much of what we do these days is online, paying bills, buying stocks, maintaining bank accounts, keeping up with friends, and storing our photos. But when we die, or if we become incapacitated, accessing our digital accounts could be a nightmare for our loved ones.
Today, we're shooting the breeze with Naomi Kahn, a law professor at George Washington University. She's an expert on digital estate planning. Great to have you on the show, Naomi.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Which online accounts are considered digital assets? What are we talking about?
We're talking about anything that you have either on your computer or that you store on the cloud or otherwise in the internet. So anything ranging from domain names, which we should all be lucky enough to have, to photos that we store online, to bank and brokerage accounts, to our Amazon accounts, to our eBay accounts, to those great American novels that we're all storing on our computers. Those are all digital assets. Anything that's got anything that has financial value or anything that has emotional value.
Well, give us an example of why we need to worry about these.
One example is when Eva Kripke, who lives in Chicago, her husband had a form of body dementia, and so she began to manage his online bank account. She was fine until one day when she had to answer a password-related question that involved the numbers on the credit card of her husband, and she destroyed the credit card when he became sick. The bank wouldn't give her access to any of the online thinking that she had been doing for him, even though she had a power of attorney. It's a brave new world in which we're all just trying to figure out what to do in this situation. Or another example, if you have any kind of a business and you store anything online, what happens if you're incapacitated? What if you're in the hospital for a brief period of time? Who's going to be able to take over all of those online accounts?
Okay, so what's involved in planning? Should we just make a list of all our online accounts and passwords, et cetera, and keep it somewhere safe?
Certainly the first thing to do is to identify each of the Internet accounts and the different passwords that you have, just because, I mean, most of us, we don't really think about it. But the average person probably has about 25 different passwords for different kinds of accounts. The first thing to do is to identify what you have. The second is to make sure that list stays current. The third thing to do is to figure out who, if anybody else, you want to have access to that information, so that if something happens to you, that other person knows how to access your accounts and knows what to do. The other thing that's going on is the Internet service providers, those people with whom you set up the accounts, have their own rules about who can manage your account. And we're all just figuring out what's going to happen as we give our passwords to others and something like that turns out to be in violation of the terms of those click-through agreements that we all click through so rapidly when we sign up.
Naomi, where should we be storing all that information?
There are various online companies that will store the information for you. So you can sign up with one of them, and they're designed to be incredibly safe. And so if you trust them, you can certainly do that. Again, the key is for you to know what you have and then for you to make sure that someone else knows what you have. That doesn't mean giving them the actual passwords, but it means letting them know where you store the information that gives you access. The thing to do is to make sure you have that list somewhere and that somebody else knows how to find it.
Digital estate planning expert Naomi Kahn, thanks so much for shooting the breeze with the two Boomer Babes.
Bailey Chase offers a lifestyle of flexibility and choice that provides you new opportunities to experience your independence and enrich your life. For more information about the lifestyle Bailey Chase offers, visit www.integrace.org. Equal housing opportunity.
While Kathy and I were cruising the internet, we came across a really neat article highlighting 50 commonly mispronounced food words. To test our own pronunciation skills, not that we ever mispronounce any words, we've called in help.
Joining us is Melissa Valiant, author of the article and editor-in-chief of HellaWella.com, a website dedicated to taking the stuffiness out of the healthy lifestyle culture. Melissa joins us from her New York City office to shoot the breeze with the babes and to hopefully give us a few pointers. Welcome, Melissa.
Hi. So excited about being on the show.
Melissa, we loved your article. How on earth did you come up with this idea?
There's a lot of words I frequently hear mispronounced, and I thought it would be cool to clear it all up.
Good. We're glad you did, because we can use some help, and we're going to actually test each other a little bit. So, Barbara, I'm going to give you a word. G-U-A-C-A-M-O-L-E.
That's so easy. Guacamole.
Actually, it varies with different people, but with the Spanish pronunciation, you almost don't even hear that G. It's so quiet. It's so soft. So it's almost like guacamole without the G.
So why put the G in there? They're wasting a letter.
Really?
Okay, now I'm going to put Kathy on the spot here.
Okay.
Kathy, how
yes.
about this one?
Uh-huh.
M-A-S-C-A-R-P-O-N-E.
Oh, Barb, that's so easy. Mascarpone.
And a lot of people mispronounce that. They do put that R in the first syllable, but there actually isn't an R in the first syllable. There's only one R in the word, and it's pronounced mascarpone.
Oh, mascarpone. Okay.
Well, once I figure out what that is, I'll, I'll know how to spell
you
it.
You can put some in your cookies, right?
Oh, okay.
Your cookie baking.
That's better. Okay, well, Melissa, obviously we need your help. How did you come up with this list? I mean, are you eavesdropping at restaurants on the patrons?
It just required a lot of research and figuring out and understanding phonetic spellings.
I bet. I think I'd kind of like that job. Well, how about this combo? I'm going to throw this out that, I mean, we really love to eat in our house, but absolutely probably mispronounce both words. Salmon and quinoa?
It's salmon.
Okay.
I don't know why they decided to put an L in the word because you don't pronounce it.
It's a silent L. Okay,
yep,
salmon.
So it's a salmon. And then the other one, no one gets this right on the first try, but it's actually quinoa.
Quinoa.
Okay, well, occasionally I like to try some fancy restaurants, especially the French ones, and I love their foods, especially pommes frites and parmesan. Did I say that right?
That was close. You actually don't pronounce the S on the end of pommes frites. It's just pommes frites.
Well, it's more than one French fry, isn't it?
We hope we get a whole bunch of them.
Yep, even the plural doesn't have the S pronounced.
Hmm.
And it's actually parmesan. Instead of ja, it's a Z sound. So parmesan.
Parmesan, Barbara.
We should put a Z in there. Okay.
Parmesan on our pizza. All right. Another one that always gets me is when we go to a Vietnamese restaurant. And I love that delicious noodle soup stuff that they have going. It's called pho, right?
And it looks like pho. So most people pronounce it that way, but it actually is pho.
Pho.
Mm-hmm. They sounds have it, dirty.
Why do they have it like P-H-O? It should be F-U-H.
It should. And actually, with pho, in different regions, it can be pronounced different ways, but the most common is pho.
Huh. Pho. Okay. We're going to go have some pho for lunch.
Okay. Okay. Well, finally, Melissa, after all your research, tell us what the top five mispronounced words are.
One that's interesting to me is chipotle. I thought everyone pronounced that correctly, but apparently a lot of people say chipotle. So it's chipotle.
Or they say chipotle. I've heard that one too.
Also, this one is a pet peeve. It's espresso, not expresso. There's no X.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Right. And then mayonnaise. A lot of people forget that middle syllable and just say mayonnaise.
Oh, it's easier just to say mayo.
Mayonnaise.
It is. Yeah, mayo's an easy solution. Sherbet. It's actually not sherbet, but everyone says sherbet. It's sherbet, no R in the last syllable.
Sherbet.
Okay.
Sherbet.
And the last one that I get a kick out of because my boyfriend can't pronounce it to save his life is Worcestershire or Worcestershire. You can say it either way. My boyfriend just calls it Liam Perrins to make it easy.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's easier. Or pass that sauce.
Well, we need to be from England maybe to say Worcestershire correctly. Well, Melissa Valiant, editor-in-chief of Halawella.com and author of the article 50 Most Commonly Mispronounced Food Words, thanks so much for shooting the breeze with the babes. It's been great fun.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
And now it's time for us babes to give credit where credit is due.
Audio and technical guru Julio Gonzalez, who magically pulls it all together.
Webmaster wizard Gail Jane, who makes TwoBoomerBabes.com a fab place to visit.
Founding members of the Chicago chapter of the Two Boomer Babes Supper Club, Mike and Larry Israel, for your unfailing love and support.
Our husbands, daughters, family, and friends, even with smirks and eye rolls, who encourage us all the way.
And give us great material, often without knowing it.
Our moms and upstairs directors, Jane and Sally, who are cheering us on from their bridge game in the sky.
Our home away from home, Delmarva Public Radio. And to you, our listeners, for joining us each week and spurring us on.
Two Boomer Babes is a production of Two Boomer Babes Media in collaboration with Zymer Communications.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.